Hey, if you remember, we're in the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 27. Let's see, it's been, 3 weeks. We went through the narrative here of Jacob receiving the blessing from, Jacob receiving the blessing from Isaac, his father, and the situation there. We went through the individuals that were involved in this narrative that we see here, each of their situations. Many look to this story as it's all Jacob's fault. He was the one that did all this. But as we looked, we saw that there was plenty of blame and guilt to go around. Nobody was free of guilt, at least as far as the four people that were involved in this. Jacob and Esau and Isaac and Rebekah. They all had their hand in this situation and what took place. So, and then we saw, we got part of this verse 41 where Esau hated Jacob and was going to, decided that to ease his loss or comfort himself, he was going to kill his brother, but he had to mourn the loss of his father, or so he thought, because remember, Isaac had said, I'm about to die, I'm on my deathbed, before I die, give me something to eat, which is how that whole narrative started. Turns out he lived, I'm trying to remember now, 40 more years, 37 more years after this incident before he died. So obviously he wasn't on his deathbed, but that's the way he portrayed it at the time. So he says, after the days of mourning for my father, then I'm going to kill my brother because that'll make me feel better for what I've gone through. And then we see that Rebekah heard what was going on. She says to Jacob, you got to leave. Verse 43, and now therefore, my son, obey my voice and arise, flee thou to Laban, my brother, to Haran, and tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury turn away. Interesting here, Rebekah seems to think that it's only going to be a few days, and Esau is going to forget this whole thing, which kind of gives us a little insight into Esau's character. If he's mad and willing to kill his brother, but in a few days, even a few weeks, he's going to get over this whole thing and not going to care about it anymore. It's Rebekah's insight into her son Esau's character. So interesting here. Yes.
I wonder if perhaps the point you're making there, that seems to be a characteristic of him. He pops his cork, but quickly gets over it.
Yeah.
Life goes on.
So verse 45, until thy brother's anger turn away from thee, for he and he forget that which thou hast done, then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? In other words, if Jacob had stayed while Esau was mad, maybe he would have gone ahead and killed his brother, and then maybe somebody would have killed Esau. She would have lost both children. So she says, you need to run away. Go to my brother Laban and Haran. And then she says, verse 46, and Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth. Why would she be weary of the daughters of Heth? Well, her son Esau has married two of them. And obviously there was conflict there. We know that they were a burden on Isaac and Rebekah's heart. We saw that in the last chapter. They didn't like the relationship that Esau had with his wives, and because they were heathen, from a heathen nation, quite possibly they were dragging his moral character down from wherever it was. So she says to Isaac, my life is weary because of them. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, in other words, if he marries someone locally, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life be? In other words, she goes to Isaac, her husband, says, look, I've given you two sons, and one has already followed this path. If the other one follows this path, what good has my life been? Because they're both headed down the wrong road. interesting that this is what it takes to prod Isaac into doing maybe what he should have been doing. Do you remember how old, by the way, Jacob is at this point? I know it's been 3 weeks. 77. He's 77 years old at this point. Esau was what? 40 when he married. Isaac, his father, was 40 when he married Rebekah. Why has he waited so long to do something about a wife for his son, Jacob? We don't know why he's waited so long. Maybe he should have done something sooner. Maybe that would have changed the whole situation. But anyhow, we turn to chapter 28. And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said unto him, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Sounds like what his father had done for him, right? Abraham, Isaac's father, sent a servant back to the land of Haran, back to Laban, back to Abraham's relatives to find a wife for Isaac. And Isaac now says kind of the same thing. Verse 2, arise now, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, thy mother, thy mother's father, and take thee a wife from thence of the daughters of Laban, thy mother's brother. In other words, go back to your relative's home back there and find a wife there. And again, like in Rebekah's case, maybe they knew of those individuals that still followed God's leading and believed in him back there, as opposed to these heathen nations that wanted nothing to do with it. So he says to his son, you don't get a wife from locally, go back to your father's or back to your mother's family, actually related to him as well. Yes, so it would have been a cousin, yeah, or distant, maybe a little more distant, depending on how far down the line. But, and you say, well, wait a minute, you're not supposed to marry your cousin. Yes, you're right, but the human race at this point has not degenerated to the point that it is now, and therefore the problem with genetics that we deal with nowadays is way different than what it was back then. So, and then Isaac says to Jacob, verse 3, and God Almighty bless thee and make thee fruitful and multiply thee, that thou mayest be a multitude of people, and give thee the blessing of Abraham to thee and to thy seed with thee, that thou mayest inherit the land wherein thou art a stranger, which God gave unto Abraham. Interesting here, Isaac basically blesses Jacob a second time, right? Taking a look at this, I begin to wonder, why would he go through this kind of the same blessing, a little different, but kind of the same again? And I started thinking, I wonder if, remember we went through the circumstance and everything that took place with Jacob deceiving Isaac and Isaac blessing Jacob and Esau not getting a blessing, well, he got kind of a blessing, and Rebekah's part in the whole thing. And the fact that Isaac knew ahead of time that the older was going to serve the younger, right? Yet even though he knew that fact and knew that God had said that, he was still going to bless Esau, which means he knew that he was going against what God wanted at that point when he was going to give that blessing. He was going to go ahead and do it because
he wanted to.
Why did he like Esau over Jacob? Food. That was it. That was it. Maybe Rebekah boiled all her meat and who knows, Esau grilled it on the grill and he liked grilling better than boiled food. I don't know, it doesn't. Well, yes, except for the fact that God had already told them the order that things were going to go. So I wonder if Isaac at this point had come to the realization that, man, I really messed up. One, I favored the wrong son, or I favored one son over the other, which I shouldn't have. Two, I was going to bless Esau, and the circumstances, or God's working through the circumstances, stepped in and kept me from messing up. Remember, what do you think? Well, we don't know because it didn't happen, but if Isaac had gone ahead and blessed Esau, even though he wasn't supposed to, what would have been the circumstances that he would have had to deal with then? I'm sure God would have worked it out. We don't know. But at any rate, at this point, I wonder if Isaac had come to the realization, you know what, I really messed up. And now this is maybe a more sincere blessing for his son Jacob. I understand what I almost did. God kept it from happening, even though I was doing it for selfish purposes or selfish reasons. And now this is a more sincere blessing that he's giving to his son. It doesn't say that. I just wonder, because he's gone through this blessing a second time. It says here specifically, I will give thee the blessing of Abraham to thee and thy seed. So he's passing down that covenant that's been given to Abraham and then to Isaac and now to Jacob. So he does say, verse 5, and Isaac sent away Jacob, and he went to Padan Aram unto Laban, son of Bethuel the Syrian, the brother of Rebekah, and Jacob and Esau's mother. So Jacob packs up or whatever and heads for his uncle's house. Laban is his mom's brother, so he basically heads for his uncle's house. It's like 500 miles from where they're at back to Haran. So this is not I can jump in my car and, well, we just drove back from South Carolina. You know, 500 miles you can do in a day, right? Sorry, not back then. I mean, we'll get into that later. It doesn't say he took a caravan with him. It doesn't say he took anybody else with him. He could have taken maybe a camel to ride or a donkey to ride and some supplies. It doesn't, obviously there wasn't a whole group of people that went back with him. He seems to be alone for this trip. So minimal supplies and moving as fast as you can. Even at that, it's going to take, a couple of weeks or so just to get from one place to the other, maybe more. Depends on how fast you walk or ride. I mean, you're not going to, you're not going to jump on your camel and run them into the ground the first 2 days and then have to walk from there. So it's a slow process. But he picks up and leaves. Interesting, verse 6. So we see Esau, who's been in this whole mix and everything that goes on. So Esau says to himself, and when Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob, let me keep reading. He saw that Isaac blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take him a wife from thence, and that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan, and that Jacob obeyed his father and his mother and was gone to Padan Aram. We're going to stop there for a minute. It's interesting here. It says, and Esau, verse 6, saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob. Now, I tried to look up this word saw here. It could mean he literally saw him, or it can mean that he considered or regarded or perceived that Isaac had done this. You would think that if he actually saw this taking place, that while he was mad there still that same day or the next day, maybe he'd have done something, so maybe he didn't actually see it, but he knew that it took place. Whatever it was went on here, Esau stops and considers the circumstances, because he said he saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob again. So he's taken this into account and sent him away to Padan Aram, back to his relatives, to take him a wife from thence, which Esau had not done, remember? And that as he blessed him and gave him a charge, saying, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan, which Esau had done, not once but twice, and that Jacob obeyed his father, which apparently Esau had not, and mother, and was gone to Padan Aram. So he sees the situation unfolding here. He sees the difference in the relationship between his father and mother and his brother, and between his father and mother and him. And you say, well, how do you know that? Well, let's read the next couple of verses. And Esau saw that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father. Okay, well, I think he already knew that somewhat, because he's already been married 37 years at this point. I think he would have understood the relationship between his parents and his wives by now, and that they were a grief to his parents. So he says, hey, I got a bright idea. You know what? I'm going to take care of this situation. He says, then he went to Ishmael and took of the wives which he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife. So what does he do? He goes to his relative, Right? That's what Jacob did, right? He was going to his relative to find a wife, so it wasn't one of the daughters of the land of Canaan, the heathens. So what does he do? He goes to the house of Ishmael. Who's Ishmael? Okay, remember Abraham and Sarah had Ishmael of Sarah's handmaid. God said, no, this is not the chosen line. So Sarah has Isaac eventually, and then Isaac has Esau and Jacob. Esau goes to his uncle's family, who are, by the way, not part of the line that happens to be where Jacob is going. And he says, you know what, I'll marry a relative. That ought to make mom and dad happy. Well, look who he picks. He picks the daughter in the line of Ishmael, who God had already said this isn't the chosen line. And again, you kind of see, which by the way is how many wives that we know of?
Three now.
So Esau says, well, I can fix this. I'll go marry somebody that's related to me and that'll make mom and dad happy. Maybe I'll still get some kind of blessing. Maybe I'll still get something out of this. You see, we kind of get another glimpse into his character.
It seems like he also chose the easiest one, much closer to him.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to fix this, but how much effort am I going to put into fixing it, as far as I'm concerned, fixing it? I'm going to go to somebody who's close and somebody easy to get to, so I don't have to make this long trip. And, you know, so Esau makes this feeble attempt, if you will, at taking care of the situation and marries his third wife. And again, why does he do this? I think Esau is realizing here, has come to the realization that maybe he's messed up. Maybe his indifference to spiritual matters and God's ways are part of the problem. Maybe he's realized that the situation that he's in is not all his brother's fault. Maybe I have to take some responsibility here because, after all, I didn't follow my parents' instructions. I think he's beginning to realize part of the situation, and he holds a big part of the guilt in the situation that's taken place here. Otherwise, he would have said, so what? Jacob's gone someplace else to find a wife. But he's trying to patch things up or make them better and makes a feeble attempt at that. which is what we do sometimes, right? We mess things up and then we make a feeble attempt to make things better. It would have been much better for Esau if he had just repented of his ways and turned from them, but he didn't. He tried to make things better. So verse 10, and Jacob went out from Beersheba and went towards Haran. So Beersheba is where they lived. He's headed towards Haran, which is like 500 miles away. Making this trip, verse 11, he lighted upon a certain place and tarried there all night because the sun was set. And he took the stones of that place and put them for his pillows, and he laid down a place to sleep. So basically, he had stopped for the night. It turns out that where he had stopped here, we'll see a few verses down the road here, was about 70 miles. So this wasn't the first night, the second, third, maybe fourth night that he had been traveling. He comes to this place. And we see by the circumstances that are going to take place here that God has led him to this place. It wasn't by circumstances. Nightfall comes around and he stops and parks for the night, you know, like we do. You travel during the day, night comes around, you want to find a hotel or motel, or, you know, if you're traveling in your camper or whatever, you stop and make camp, whatever tent, whatever it might be, you stop for the night and rest, right? Any of you own a stone pillow? Yeah, some of them are like stones. No, I don't sleep on a stone pillow either. My neck aches already with the pillow I've got, and I'm constantly looking for a better one. Stones for a pillow, pretty rough. So obviously he doesn't have all the comforts of home. Obviously he hasn't traveled with, you know, his pillows, his blankets, his sleeping bag, his tent, his, you know, he's not traveling with all the comforts of home. It's a pretty bare minimum trip because he's got to use stones for a pillow. But God has led him to this place. And verse 12, verse 12 says, and he dreamed and beheld a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached to heaven, and behold, the angels of God ascending and descending on it. We're going to stop there for a minute. So he stops there, and God gives him this dream of a ladder. You might call it an escalator or a ramp, whatever it is, this means of travel from earth to heaven. And who does he see traveling up and down this ladder? Angels. Interesting. This vision that he's given of angels traveling back and forth from earth to heaven. We're not going to get into a big discussion about angels and what they do and all of that. That'd be a big rabbit trail to head down, so we're not going to head down that. But we see some of the interaction. He's given insight into the interaction between the heavenly and the earthly, and how the angels, which we know are God's messengers and workers of God, travel back and forth doing God's work, whatever that might be, here on earth. So he's given this insight as to even the fact that God is still working through different situations here on earth. It's not just a big gap. There's a vast gap between heaven and earth, and he doesn't see a vision of here's earth and here's heaven with a vast gap. He sees a method of transportation back and forth for the angels, and that they're coming back and forth and doing God's work. So interesting here. I want to read a paragraph here out of a commentary. Of course, there is no literal staircase to heaven that angels use to ascend and descend. We know that. It's a picture. It was a dream. This was a dream, but a dream that symbolizes marvelous reality. Though earth is surely separated by a vast, seemingly impassable gulf of space from the heavens of God's presence, signifying man's separation from God's holiness, a bridge has been built to span the gulf. That magnificent ladder could only be built by God himself. Obviously, we have no way to bridge the gap between us and God, but God has made a bridge between the two. And is, in fact, God himself. If you turn to John chapter 1, real quick, John chapter 1, verse 51. Jesus, as he's talking to Nathanael, makes mention of this. He says, "And he saith unto him, Nathanael, verily, verily, I say unto you, hereafter ye shall see the heavens open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." Interesting here, Jesus' mention of what Jacob has seen way back here. and again, to finish off this paragraph, the Lord Jesus Christ claimed that he himself was the only means by which one could go from heaven and earth, right? That he is the only means that we have to be accessible, that we can travel or that we can go to heaven or have any access to heaven. He is the way, he is the one mediator between God and man. And we see that he mentions this or alludes to this in John chapter 1. So, that's all the farther we're going to go into the angels and what they do and everything else. We're going to continue on with our narrative here in Genesis. And it's, yep, there's the first buzzer. And then it says, part of the dream, and behold, the Lord stood above it. So, the Lord's above the ladder in heaven and said, I am the Lord God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land wherein thou liest to thee, I will give it, and to thy seed. And thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad unto the west, and to the east, and to the north, and to the south. And in thee, and in thy seed, shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken unto thee. So God basically gives this promise to Jacob. He's given the promise to Abraham, his grandfather. He's given a promise to Isaac, his father, and now he's given it directly to Jacob. I keep getting the name straight here. So he appears to him, and he basically is giving him this promise. Interesting here, it kind of follows along the line of the others, but a little different. He says, I am the Lord God of Abraham and Isaac, your father, grandfather. The land wherein thou liest to thee, I will give it to thy seed. So Abraham, he said, I'm going to send you to a land, right? and I'm going to give it to you. Isaac, to Isaac, his father, he says, this land that you're in, I'm going to give to you. To Jacob, he says what? The spot what? Not just, he says, this spot that you're lying on here, this is part of the land I'm going to give to you. And we'll see here where he was in a few minutes. He says, and thyself shall be as the dust of the earth. We've seen that before. Thou shalt spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and the south. That's a little different phrasing. Basically the same thing. Your seed is going to multiply. Now here he's given it a little different, but basically the same thing. In thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now when he said, when God spoke to Abraham, he said families. When he spoke to Isaac, he said nations. And now he's saying families of the earth. In other words, all the people of the earth will be blessed through your seed. Verse 15, then he says to Jacob specifically, and behold, I am with thee and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land. Where was Jacob headed? He was headed to his relatives, out of the promised land. God says to him, I will be with you, I will keep you and watch over you until you return back to this land. I'm going to bring you back to here. I will not leave you until I have done all that I've spoken to you. In other words, until all this has been accomplished, I'm not going to leave you. Interesting that God has brought Jacob to this point in his life. Where had he lived pretty much up to this point in his life? At home, right? At home with his family on the farm, doing the work there. Basically safe and sound, but God has brought him through circumstances into a place where now he's in the wilderness all by himself. He's not like his brother. He didn't go out and live on the land. So he's in this situation where he's got a lot of travel to do all by himself, and God has brought him to this place, I think, to strengthen his character, because God needs to develop him and grow him to be the leader of this nation that he's going to bring through him. If you were in this situation, this would bring you a lot of comfort, wouldn't it? I mean, after all, now I'm going to give you maybe a mule or a camel, some supplies, not even a pillow, and I'm going to send you 500 miles away. After the first couple of days, you're going to say, ooh, I'm starting to get a long ways from home. And yet God assures him that he will be with him. We'll continue this later on. God tells us that he will be with us no matter what we journey through in life, doesn't he? So we're kind of in Jacob's situation in a way as well. Okay, Lord bless you this morning. You're dismissed.